Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode of the Dr. Will Show, the Mobile University for Entrepreneurs. This is the go-to business podcast for educators who want to learn how to make the impact and the income. I'm your host, Dr. Will, and today we are here and blessed to have Catherine Goyette to come on and drop the gems. She's been in the game for a while, y'all. If you have seen her online, you've seen her at the conferences, you've seen her with her husband, Adam, co-authors of books. They're consulting, they're doing the thing. And today, like I said, we're blessed to have her on. And I cannot wait to get into this interview. So for those of you listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Simplecast, Stitcher, Spotify, and Audible, will you please introduce yourself, Catherine?
Yes, thank you. So, Catherine Goyette and Dr. Will, so great to be with you again. I had the privilege of being on the show. I don't even remember how long ago, a few years ago. So it's great to be back. Yeah, so I'm based in Central California, not the California most people think of. You know, they think of like Hollywood or the beach or whatever. I'm in a more agricultural area. But yeah, I am, like Dr. Will said, my husband and I wrote a book that we wish we had when we were starting in the ed tech game, so to speak, and really found a passion for just wanting to share with others and help them out. And I'm now in my day job, I'm at the State Department of Education, so I'm doing some work over there, but still, doing all I can, like Dr. Will said, going to the conferences, trying to connect with people, support any way I can, and really learn. There's a lot to learn right now with all the new things, the AIs and the studies on social media impacts and conversations about mental health and how technology is impacting that. There's a lot of new things that we could certainly get into with all of that.
All right. So I'm always curious as to how people got to where they are. But what did you think you were doing when you were growing up? And what is your EDU story?
When I was growing up, I did not want to be a teacher because my parents were both teachers and I didn't want to be like my parents. But I will say I did want to be an author. And I wanted to create. And so whatever that looked like, whether it was, creating plays that I made my brother, perform with me or whatever happened to be, it was always about creation. So I think that, and the reason that I wanted to create and the reason I wanted to write was because I wanted to make people happy. I wanted them to think about things, right? So I think education kind of fell into it, needed a job and started teaching at a private music school and realized, oh, I really like this. I guess I should go into this. And I always loved tech, right? I was one of the few back in the 80s, one of the very few kids in the neighborhood, of course, that my dad, invested and spent a lot of money on a personal PC, right? One of those Apple, it was a Macintosh SE, I think. So I just loved all that stuff. Loved all of just seeing what you could do with technology. And so just kind of naturally went into education, started as a kindergarten teacher, taught kinder, first, second, fifth, and sixth grades. Always used as much technology as I could get my hands on with my students. And then when I became a coach and an administrator, I realized, not everyone teaches the same way I do. Not all kids have access to these opportunities with technology that they had in my classroom and they had in some of my peers. And so I realized this is an equity issue. A lot of times, I'm not blaming the teachers. Sometimes they just don't know, or they don't know what they don't know. And so that kind of really led me into this passion of trying to help educators to teach in a way where they're leveraging the tools that are already there. But also recently I've been thinking about how does this impact the way we teach for the modern student, right? Because they have technology everywhere. And so what do we need to do as adults to make sure that we're meeting their needs? Sometimes with tech, sometimes with teaching them how to be responsible and say no to tech as well, right? Like there's a balance that we got to work on. So that's kind of how I came up. Yeah, didn't think I'd be an educator, but here I am and loving it. So
those who may or may not know you, or at least if they Google you, they've seen that you have positioned yourself as a leader in the field, as a coach with leadership end with EdTech integration. Was that your strategy in building your personal brand? Was that intentional, or that just come about naturally?
That's a good question. I would say it came about naturally because I found that I guess it came from the passion, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to build a brand and I'm going to be an EdTech person, right? I think it just kind of happened because the needs at the time of what mm-hmm. teachers were needing support with, as well as things that interested me. So I think that, you know, for those that are looking to say, well, what is my brand going to be? What are you interested in? And what's jiving with other people, right? So because we got to have a two-way street, right? So what I enjoy and I'm passionate about, if no one really cares about it, I'm not going to be able to build much of a brand that can go very far, right? But if I find something that others also say, hey, I find value in that, I'm interested in that, then that's kind of how that's going to go. So yeah, I guess it was quasi-accidental, but I'm also not surprised because, like I said, it's really based on my interests, so to speak.
And at what point did you recognize that what you were doing in schools could become a scalable business model or a consulting framework?
That's a great question. I had the opportunity to actually work at a county office for a bit. And so county offices, the way it worked in the county office I worked in, which was my day job, is that they actually, small districts that, you know, don't have the money to hire an ed tech coach or what have you, or a company that'll come in and do this work, those small districts will pay the county office to have someone go out. And so I was kind of like this public service consultant thing, so to speak. And so I started seeing, like, there's value in this. Teachers are looking for this. Administrators are looking for this. And so then it just kind of grew in how can I build this in a way that I'm supporting more individuals, right? And so, you know, yeah, you can only be in one place so many times. Like, you can't be in, unfortunately, the technology is not, so that I can be in two districts simultaneously, right? So there's a cap to that. So if you want to serve more people, you know, like Dr. Will, you've got your podcast people can listen to every time, anytime they want. You've got your book, right? So you have to find ways to share your learning and share your message beyond those avenues. So I think that's how that desire to try to just reach more people, so to speak, is what it helped with. Okay, well, maybe we should, you know, start. My husband and I started a Twitter chat back in the day when that was still, you know, a thing, which was awesome and really grew. And then from there was, you know, people that would ask for more, right? Hey, can you come to my district? Hey, can you come, you know, to my school? But again, there's only so many hours in a day. So what if we create, have some blogs, and then what if we write a book, and what if, you know, create some courses? Like, there's all different ways that you can kind of scale if you think beyond that model that we're all used to in education of standing in front of people and teaching them right that moment, right? So
yeah. And so you just mentioned the book that you wrote with Adam, The Complete EdTech Coach. What was the pain point behind you writing the book?
So we wrote the book we wish we had had when we became EdTech coaches, because at the time that was a pretty new thing. Chromebooks were just starting, you know, some iPads as well, but most in our area, mostly Chromebooks were just starting to go into classrooms on a one-to-one basis. Teachers didn't really know what to do with them, how to leverage it for learning. And so we were kind of thrown into these positions. We were both the first of our positions, right? You know, they'll figure out what to do. So we kind of wrote, it was really a passion project. It wasn't so much like, oh, we're going to write this book and, you know, make a bunch of profit off of it. It was more of, we have all these stories, we have this learning that people are really appreciating when we go to conferences and speak and such. And so that was really where the book came from. But what an experience. Like, you got to just get yourself out there and try something, right? We'd never published a book before, right? We, you know, this was new. And so if you go out there and try something like that, you're going to learn, you know, especially as educators, that's typically not our entrepreneurship is not often, you know, we think in service as educators. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes it's difficult for us to say, well, maybe, you know, I appreciated, some of this, the themes of this in your book, Dr. Will. I just read it like this month, I think. And the idea that educators sometimes don't realize, like, you should charge people for some of the things that you do because you've put in a lot of time, you have a lot of experience, you have, and so realizing that I think is really important. So, so anyone that's listening, you know, it's easy to have that imposter syndrome and be like, well, but I'm just a teacher. I'm just this. No, you've got hours and hours of experience. And so people should pay you for all of that that you've done.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing up the book. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you purchasing the book as well. Now, those of us who write these books, we don't, you know, we'll either self-publish or we'll go with an education publisher. So we're not normally, you know, signing with Random House or somewhere where we're going to get that $25,000 advancement or what have you. So, you know, we're not living large on right. that book deal, right? And of course, the royalties, whatever you get per sale will be different depending on what you have negotiated or signed with your publisher if you went that route. I do know that it's sexy to be on Amazon, but Amazon takes too much money. What was, when you look at your book and having it out there, and people, there are going to be information and links in the show notes for you to go purchase their book. Go get it. I have copied myself. What has the book done for your business? And how have you seen it open up new doors for you in terms of speaking, consulting, or even partnerships?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the, as you said, the book is not the big money maker as far as the royalties, right? In the education space. But the book has is a way that people that in other parts of this, you know, we knew a lot of people in California, right? But now, you know, people outside of our state might get a copy of it and say, hey, can you come talk with my ed tech coaches? Would you be willing to do a book study with us? You know, we'll pay you to run this book study, or we'll have you come out and keynote this conference or whatever it may be. So really, it opened up opportunities in that way. And it also, it gives you this credibility, like, oh, you're a published author. Right. I think that is something that is just kind of implicit that helps with that credibility as well. And it takes time to write a book. It shows you're committed to something and you have something to say if you're actually going to write a book. And since if I could, Dr. Will, since you brought up kind of how the different ways of writing books and different ways of publishing and such, because your audience is entrepreneurs will be entrepreneurs at some point. I'll say too that there's lots of different ways to go about this. So we did go with an educational publisher for our book, and it was a great decision at the time because we didn't really know what we were doing in regards to like getting, you know, things like, oh, you're going to have to get a cover done and you're going to have to get some people to do some testimonials perhaps if you want those inside the book, and then, you know, formatting and you know, getting it published onto Amazon or wherever you're going to have, you know, all those things were a big deal. So we're glad that we did that. But we have another book coming out soon, finally, 5 years later. And that's actually going to be about history, teaching history in K-8 in interdisciplinary settings, of course, with an ed tech spin, as always. But that we're going to self-publish. And so we had seen that there were some other educational authors we knew that would had self-published. We asked them some questions and we just thought, well, we're going to try this now, right? So I think whatever way you go is okay, and you're going to learn a lot. But yeah, there's just lots of different ways of entrepreneurship in general. Right. It's not I have to do it this particular way, but really reaching out and talking with others is how we really kind of determined decisions on all these things. Oh, you have a course? How's that going? You know, so I think especially the ed tech community is very giving and very connected because technology moves so fast. We can't know everything. And so it's definitely worth reaching out to others and asking, you know, what they think. What might work for you?
Mm. And I'm glad you went deeper with that, because you do have to really figure out sort of what is your end game with your book beyond just, I want it published for vanity's sake. Because especially if, let's just say you get a 40% cut of sales from your book deal, right? And it's sold, and I'm not good at math, so I'm just going to throw some numbers out there. And you folks at home, you can do the math, all right? I'm not good at math like that. But if your book is selling for $25, but you're getting 40% of that, but you're not going to get 40% of that because whatever platform that book is on Books a Million, Barnes & Noble, what have you, that company is going to also get a cut of that too. So that 25 is not going to be 25. It's going to be minus that 40% or that 30% or whatever that company takes. And then you're going to get your 40 off of that. And so you got to think about that. And then you need to think about how many units are you going to push? All of us are going, we'll be going to this thing thinking, okay, I'm going to do a little something, something. But remember, most of us are not Stephen King. So how many of these units, you know, really are you going to push? And so you have to think of that book, not as the end point, but as the starting point to other things that you have mentioned, such as the course. So in thinking about that, would you recommend for other educators, particularly entrepreneurs, to write a book to grow their influence? And what advice would you give for them making that to be a smart move? Is that a smart business move or is that just a passion project?
I think if you, so I will say, I think it depends on the amount of time that it will take you to write the book and how comfortable you are with that. So for my husband and I, we had been blogging for so long, and I love to write, that it was very natural and didn't feel like a lot of work to write a book. I find others, I have some, you know, entrepreneur friends that maybe haven't written a book, but probably have a lot more influence than me because they do a lot of things on YouTube. They have an amazing voice and they do all these great, you know, and that's cool too. So I think for me, the book is fantastic because that's my jam. But I don't think it's necessarily a prerequisite. There could be other ways, right? Yeah, books are, I love books. I mean, I have a kind of home library, you know, back here. You know, I'm just, that's just me. I said I wanted to be an author, right? And when I was a little kid. But I do think there's other ways that you could do it. But it is pretty effective and pretty helpful. There's other things too. Like, so I'm thinking in our, you know, maybe it's not a book, but maybe you're really good at like preparing, like writing some curriculum ideas or writing some lessons, or, you know, there's lots of other ways that you can, you know, kind of market some of your things as well. So, or like a report, maybe it's a little report about top 10 ways to use, I don't know, Google apps or, well, I mean, that's a little dated, but whatever it may be, right? Maybe that's your in. So I guess I just don't, do you, if you want to write a book and that's your jam, then yes, do it. But if you're like, oh my gosh, that freaks me out. I don't want to write a book. That sounds like too much work, but wow, I would love to do a podcast or I'd love to do, you know, a video series or whatever, then do that, right? Whatever it is, though, I think one of the most important things is consistency. And so I found when I started, I was challenged a few years ago by George Kuros, who wrote The Innovator's Mindset and now met several other books. He challenged me to blog once a week. And I, because he read one of my blog posts, I said, oh, that's really nice. First of all, I was like, this is one of my edu heroes. Like, this is big. I was super excited, right? But I was like, every week, that's a lot. And he said, if you don't do it every week, you're not going to build your following. That's the way it works. All right. So I decided I'll try it, you know. And sure enough, like my, you know, email list really started growing the more that I did that, because it's just that consistency, right? I mean, we know in business that consistency is key. So, but again, doesn't have to be a blog. If it's a podcast, if it's, I don't know. I mean, I told you I grew up in the 80s, so I'm not super young, but maybe, you know, there's some like TikTok or Instagram stuff that you could do, as long as whatever it is, if you're consistent, like that's the key, I think. Yeah. But that will definitely. So this, I guess the smart business move then would be find something that you're super excited about, that you feel like I can be consistent with this. I personally could not be consistent with having, I had some colleagues that had a weekly podcast for a while, and they built, you know, they had some income coming in from YouTube, from that and stuff. I can't be consistent with that. I know myself. I can be consistent with the blog. So whatever it is, find something you can be consistent with. And I'd say that's the way to start.
So what does your current business model look like, and what has changed over the past few years?
So I'd say the current model is like, I would say I'm still, I still have a day job, right? Some people go 100% entrepreneur, and that's awesome. I am really enjoying the work that I'm doing in my day job. And so I'm not ready yet to leave that. But, you know, there's the book. There's opportunities that come from that. I just started blogging again. I have a three-year-old, and so I got a little off of that for a bit because, you know, that takes a lot of time. But I think the model, though, that I'm really thinking about now is you have one book. What are you going to do next, right? Okay, so it might so we have another one that's coming out. Great. Okay, but then what, right? So I'm trying to think, like, our next one is going to be more like lesson idea focused. So, like, with AI, you can create stuff like that, right? So, like, could we then create some material that would go with the book so that then we can sell that, right? So I'm trying to think of, like, especially if you're going to keep your day job, which that's, you know, whether you do or not, up to you. Someday, I'm sure I will go full entrepreneurship, but I've got some goals at the moment in my current role. And so I'm sticking with that for a while. But thinking about how can I keep adding on more things that people can purchase, right? So, you know, I think that's the key, is just trying to figure. So how it's changed is, like, it's not just about the book. It's not even just about speaking anymore. We used to get real excited, my husband and I, when we would be asked to do a keynote or do some consulting in a district. And we still get excited. Like, that's cool. But now what we're trying to focus on a little more now, I think, is that passive income, mm-hmm. right? Like, okay, we have the book. Another one's coming out. Even if it wasn't, were there things that we could create that people could just, you know, spend a bit of money on and kind of go that route? And I did see, it was real timely, because I have to say, this is a bit new for me, thinking of how this is going to work as far as kind of selling these digital products, so to speak. But I did see it mentioned, Dr. Will, in your entrepreneur book about that was one way, to make some profit, so to speak. But Just gotta keep moving on, I guess. Keep moving forward.
Yeah, it is interesting, and having all of the different people that I've had on the show and to hear about what other people are doing. I have, you know, I took a hiatus from the going to schools, doing that LMS integration type of stuff that I was doing. And one of it was because I was just being brought in for the wrong reason. You know, it was, they're not using it. Can you come in? Right. And that's a culture problem. That's not a thing that I'm going to fix.
Right.
You know, overnight. So I was like, no, thank you. I have my own day job situation that I'm working with. So I was like, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to do that. At first I was like, I'll take your money. You know, I wouldn't tell them that, but I'll take your money. But it just got to a point to where I knew, okay, this is a culture issue. This is not a good fit. Cause I don't want to do that anymore. And so just sort of figuring out, what do you want to do? What is going to be next? Especially, you know, you and I had this conversation before we started recording about how the landscape is changing. And then there's the political headwinds that are coming in, and then people not knowing, you know, what to do. And then we know people who, they live on the road. And I'm like, I'm 51 years old. I do not want to live on the road, right? So trying to figure out, well, how do you mix some FaceTime in with some online webinars and creating consumables and other things to actually create a business, you know, that way? What does your world look like right now? And what are you hearing from other people in this space as things are shifting?
Yeah, I think the world in edtech has changed. And like you say, in education in general, there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of lack of support from a lot of places for public education right now, which makes it difficult. And I think there's also there's kind of a backlash against edtech from people that associated digital learning with the pandemic. And so now it's like, well, I don't want to touch that because that was a bad time, right? And so things are definitely changing, which I think for me has really, has really helped me maybe change my focus, right? Like we were thinking, okay, we have the ed tech coach book. Maybe next we're going to do ed tech teacher, complete ed tech, you know? It's like, you know, I don't think that's going to go over real well right now. Not because it's not important, but maybe there's a different way to reach people that don't know that they need ed tech or that they want ed tech, right? So our next book is really based on that idea that like we got to pivot. We got to meet the needs of the consumers, if you want to say that, because it's just I don't think it would sell right now, right? And so the other thing is thinking about like how can we leverage what is real big right now, AI, right? So even though that our book is not about AI, it is about, you know, it's called History Matters in an Era of AI, because the idea that there's all this misinformation that's out there, there's all these, you know, AI is causing a lot of division and, you know, the echo chambers and such. And so even though it's not a book about AI, like, hey, putting it in the title is probably a good idea, right? Putting EdTech in the title, not a good idea right now, right? So I think the world, and I think that for me, my world has changed because I have seen the changing landscape, and that has caused me to realize I better think about the best way to make this work and to still make a difference. In regards to like day to day, on my calendar, I've got my you know, my tasks, my day job stuff, and then I always have like business building and like exploring, you know, because I want to keep learning. I have some things on my calendar that just show up as well to try and make sure that I do have things to write about, that I am, you know, spending time sending out some promotional emails or whatever it will may be. So I think that there was a time where I didn't do that, and I think that my business suffered because of that lack of consistency, right? You just have to be consistent, and then that helps you to learn too, right? So yeah, the world's definitely changed and it will continue to change, but just finding, I suppose, finding what you're passionate about, but packaging it in a way that people say, I think I'm interested in that, right? I think is part of it.
And how do you know or decide what to say yes to and what to pass on? Do you have a filter? Is it driven by your mission? What actually guides you with that?
I would say one thing is, like you were saying, like, I'm not going to be traveling all the time. And so I could travel a lot more, but I don't market my services in that way because that's not the kind of work I want to do right now. When I was younger, when I was just starting, I'd go out and do gigs for free all the time just to get my name out there, which, you know, people can say yes or no, you know, if that's a good thing or not. It's what I did. Didn't know any better. But I think that, you know, you got to just kind of think about what is it that is going to make you not burn you out, number one, but also what is it that makes you happy, right? I do find like you know, there are some conferences that I try to never miss. I see colleagues from across the country that I connect with, right? So I don't say no to those, but making sure that there's like a purpose, I think, for all of these things, is what guides that, I would say.
So before we go, again, it's been awesome having you back. When you think about your legacy, what are you building towards?
So, you know, I think that I want my ideas out there. And when I say my ideas, I want to put ideas out there that will cause people to think and to question. And so I will say that sometimes to get to that legacy, like I think our first book asks a lot of questions. I think that this next book is going to ask a lot of questions about considering why are we prioritizing ELA and math over other content areas, and why, you know, why are things being siloed? And so there's some questions in there, right? But I think that sometimes we do have to get in the door. And so to have that legacy, sometimes we have to do the quick wins. Here's a lesson. Here's a lesson complete with printables, and you could just, you know, digital resources that you can send it on your LMS, right? Because you have to kind of grow the interest and such. But I would say that for me, I want people to really think and be purposeful about what they're doing in education, wherever that may be. So that would say that's, if I could do that, if I can leave the world with some questions about making sure that they consider their purpose, then I think I've done well.
That is all right. Catherine, thank you for coming back on.
Thank you. I so appreciate it, Dr. Will. And thank you to everyone that's listening. We appreciate all of you for all you do.
All right. Now, people, you know how I do this. This podcast is going to be on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Simplecast, Spotify, and Audible, and other podcast platforms. I need you to share. I need you to subscribe. And I need you to listen, okay? Because they do check. Oddly enough, they check to see if you have listened, how long you've listened. So do that and leave me some stars. Leave me some reviews because I'm trying to get Oprah on the show because I want her to know that we're doing big things around here. And once Oprah gets on my show, I am quitting my job. I'm done.
I love that. That's great.
I am done because I'm riding off with Auntie O. She's going to produce me to do something. I'm off. So that's how I see it in my head anyway. Again, I'd like to thank my guest, Catherine Goyet, for coming on and checking, dropping so many gems. And for you for checking out another episode of the Dr. Will Show, now in season 11. As always, invest in you, EDU. Peace.